Hello, it's Wednesday 21st of July. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson. On today's show, Gary Bauman of Check in Asia and I are delighted to welcome Ho Chi Minh City-based Mike Tatarski to discuss the year so far in Vietnam. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today's show kicks off our new 2021 The Year So Far series, where we'll be talking to local analysts in each country of the region to find out what's been happening so far in the year. First up, we're excited to start with Vietnam, and we'll be chatting with Mike Tatarski, who is Editor-in-Chief of Saigonia and founder of the excellent Vietnam Weekly newsletter. So Mike, thanks very much for coming on the show. How are you doing today, and how's daily life at the moment in Ho Chi Minh City?
Yeah, thanks for having me and for the kind words about the newsletter. So I'm doing all right. For those that don't know, we've been in hard lockdown here in Ho Chi Minh City since, it'll be 2 weeks on Friday, which currently that's when the lockdown is scheduled to end. But given the daily case numbers here, which we'll get to, that appears highly unlikely. In fact, not likely at all. So yeah, this is, by Vietnam standards, I think it's safe to say this is the hardest lockdown they've had anywhere yet here. So we basically can only leave the house to get food or emergency treatment if it comes to that. You can't exercise outside. You can't walk your dog outside. You're not really supposed to go to other districts of the city unless you absolutely have to. So yes, this is a very strict lockdown for a city of 13 million or so.
Yeah, tough times indeed. We'll come to some of the details as we go along. We've got plenty to talk about in the next 30 minutes. So let's start by going back to the beginning, Mike. You were born and educated in the US. You completed your degree at the University of Pittsburgh, but you've lived in Vietnam for, I think, about a decade now. What brought you to Southeast Asia, and what inspired you to stay?
So fairly standard origin story, I guess, of coming here. I mean, when I was in school, so I studied political science and history, had a lot of interest in current events and, international affairs and that sort of thing. So I knew I wanted to work abroad, took the test for the State Department's Foreign Service. That didn't really go anywhere. So honestly, kind of just Googled like ways to work abroad and came across English teaching. Southeast Asia came up as, a good place to go for quality of life balance. And I found a program where you did 2 weeks of TESOL training in Phnom Penh, and then you could choose to do the next 2 weeks in Ho Chi Minh City, Bangkok, a couple other cities in the region. And I chose Vietnam, honestly, largely because of Anthony Bourdain's TV shows. I mean, remained a huge fan of his. I don't think the CNN show had started back in 2010, but had watched No Reservations pretty religiously, read his books. He had done several episodes already at that point about Vietnam and really, really loved it. I had also seen the Top Gear Vietnam special, the British car show. Was kind of like, well, it looks cool. I'll give it a shot. Had eaten Vietnamese food once, didn't know very much about the country, to be honest. Yeah, came for what I told myself was going to be a year. Well, 10 years later, over 10 years later now, still here. And eventually, through a series of kind of luck, I suppose, and some talent, I hope, got into writing, and then really within the last 5 or 6 years into what I would call, doing actual journalism.
Nice. So yeah, like you say, it's one of those almost typical stories, I guess, going abroad to teach English and then finding through luck and circumstance different opportunities. So you've been editor-in-chief now for Saigonia for about 4.5 years. Tell us more about that, and has your content approach changed this year?
So Saigonia has been around for, I think it's 7 or 8 years now. So it was founded by an American guy and a Spanish guy. They've both been here for longer than me, so know the city and the country very well. And it's definitely evolved over the years. I mean, initially it was basically just the two of them. And then they gradually started to hire staff that made it more of a serious publication. We focus on, since we publish, we have an English site, a Vietnamese site, a Korean site, and also Urbanist Hanoi, which is our Hanoi sister site, which those are all expansions that have happened within the last couple of years, which is nice. But since our main people know us the most for the English site, we're often kind of considered like for expats or foreigners, and we really don't want to be seen as, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, we all live here, over half of our staff is Vietnamese. So we really want to make sure that it's for Vietnamese as much, if not more so, than for foreigners. So we don't write, we'd like to say we don't do like Vietnam 101. Like we're not going to do a story about what Ha Long Bay is, or, you know, the top five off the beaten path towns to visit or something like, well, certainly not now with no tourism, but even during normal times, we try to go deeper on Vietnamese culture and history and food. We do a lot of food writing. Our Hem Gems series is probably our most well-known product, if you want to use that word. So, I mean, it's on pause right now, but normally it's weekly. We're finding hidden gems of street food with, you know, some have really long history, some serve a really unique dish. People really find that useful. So, I mean, yeah, within the last year, year and a half, our focus has kind of had to change at times. You know, this isn't the first COVID wave we've had here. It's by far the most serious, but there have been other periods, brief periods, thankfully, where, you know, street food would be shut down or travel would be restricted or something like that. So when that happens, we have to refocus a little bit. Certainly right now has been the most challenging because we, you know, we've been working from home for well over a month now. We were kind of early to switch to that. So we can't go out and meet people. We can't, there's nothing to, all restaurants are closed. So you can't go out and eat anything, which is tough. And it's, we try not to like just focus on COVID, even though that's almost all there is in the news, because that kind of gets depressing after a while. So, but we still, amidst all of that, we're still doing as best as we can to try to create stories unrelated to COVID that have more in-depth at various aspects of the country and its culture.
Yeah, it's a great magazine. I mean, I read the online version, have done for many, many years. You have great graphics as well. You have good content, but great graphics, I think.
It is digital only. There's never been a print version. There never will be. That's just a pain. But yeah, thank you for the graphics. That's our design team is amazing, and they've really been stepping up their game even more so recently.
On the back of that, you've actually launched your own newsletter, Vietnam Weekly, which I think you launched last year. And both Hannah and I read that one all the time. How much has the focus of your content changed? I mean, how much do you cover travel and tourism? You have to cover COVID as well. You know, when you initially started doing the newsletter, has it kind of panned out as you thought it might?
It's a good question. I mean, I actually started it a couple years ago, but on MailChimp. So I switched to Substack. That was about a year ago. So that's when I did start to pick up more of a following. I mean, it's kind of an organic thing. So yeah, I mean, initially going into it, I didn't have any like set goals. I mean, I was kind of inspired by a couple other regional newsletters, especially Aaron Cook's region-wide newsletter wrap, which I'm guessing you probably both read as well. So kind of wanted to, so with Steganeer, I mean, given the kind of restrictions on the media here, we don't cover hard news or, you know, really government issues. It's just not what our license is for, which is fine to avoid that stuff at times anyway. So I, with the newsletter, personal newsletter, I kind of wanted to cover maybe stuff that we don't do as in depth and at Saigonier, and that I feel is maybe being some of the domestic media might be kind of missing in terms of like, they'll have the headline news, but kind of be missing the context or a bit more deeper look at it. Not always, but sometimes. So, I mean, initially, for a while, it was kind of, I would hit two or three different topics within one newsletter. You know, it could be economic growth, an update on the metro system here in Saigon, and new visa regulations or something like that. But since this outbreak started, I mean, it's been, the past month probably now, it's been strictly COVID. And I've actually been sending it out on Mondays and Fridays. Normally it's Friday only, but there's just so much happening. And interestingly, I mean, it's been nice. I've been getting a really great response and a lot of new readers. So it's clearly doing something of a public service in kind of distilling the COVID news, because there is a lot that's reported in Vietnamese that's not being translated, or sometimes it can just be really confusing to follow what's going on. So that's been really nice, but I am definitely looking forward to not just writing about COVID at some point.
Yeah, I think I know exactly where you're coming from, as does Gary.
Yeah.
We would love to stop talking about COVID. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, your newsletter is almost like a public service at the moment, particularly, you know, I'm trying to keep track of what's going on in Vietnam in terms of COVID and lockdowns and everything else. And it is super invaluable. So let's look back at the beginning of 2021 then this year. So Vietnam looked pretty COVID safe, right? What was daily life back then? Were people traveling for business, for leisure?
Yeah, I mean, the start of this year was similar to most of last year for Vietnam, largely normal. I mean, which I'm sure we'll get into this, but other than the, you know, strict border restrictions, you know, not almost nobody coming in from overseas, domestically, it was largely normal. You know, for Western New Year's, we flew to Hoi An and stayed in a small hotel. A bunch of people rented rooms in the area, a bunch of friends. So we had like a big group for that. Zero restrictions, you know, other than wearing a mask on the plane at the airport, you didn't have to wear it at any other time. Restaurants, bars, open. I mean, obviously a lot, especially in Hoi An, have been impacted by the lack of international tourism, but places that were open were very busy. You know, we could go to the well, there weren't many movies coming out because a lot are from the States and stuff was delayed, but cinemas were open. You could go to the gym normally, you name it. It was pretty normal. So yeah, people were traveling for work, for business, for pleasure, you know, especially given, I think the US and Europe were going through pretty severe COVID waves in the start of the year, you know, and during winter, and we were pretty much free to live normal life here.
You mentioned, Mike, you're having a sustained case spike at the moment, and you also mentioned there have been other ones previously, and one of those came around about the Tet holiday. What kind of impact did that have?
Yeah, that definitely impacted travel. So I can't remember the exact dates at this point, but there were cases largely in one relatively small northern province. So that came out shortly before Tet, which, if anyone doesn't know, is by far the biggest holiday of the year here. Everyone gets at least a week off. Most people, like there's a lot of, especially here in the city, a lot of people are from other provinces. They just come here to work. So, you know, people flood back to the Mekong Delta, Central Highlands, other areas where a lot of migrant workers come from. So, but there was largely up north at the start of Tet. I mean, down here, we didn't really have cases. Me and my partner, we went to Fujian province, and we, you know, discussed whether we should still go through with that or not. And we ended up going. It was perfectly safe, but kind of like at the day we landed in Fujian, that was, they detected a cluster among worker, like baggage handlers at the airport here, which was a little concerning, but that got tamped down very fast. We actually ended up spending a couple extra days in Fujian where there were no cases, and it was very safe because we weren't sure what was going to happen here in Ho Chi Minh City, but came back after a week and it was fine. And so that, I mean, I remember reading that there were a lot of domestic travel cancellations, but there was still a good amount of travel. Some people's holidays were definitely disrupted, but it wasn't like a mass, mass cancellations or anything.
And so then later, you know, so cases went back down, and then early May kind of onwards, cases really started to rise quite quickly. And the Delta variant, of course, is the one kind of behind this rate of infection. So what's the current situation now in Ho Chi Minh City, Hanoi, nationwide?
Yeah, so they've put the start date of this outbreak at April 27th, which interestingly was right before, we also have national holidays on April 30th and May 1st. That's a big holiday weekend. You know, I'll be curious to see how this is looked back upon once we're out of this outbreak, but that holiday weekend was largely allowed to go on uninterrupted, despite there being some cases this starting in the north. And there were some warnings from government officials at that time that were pretty dire in terms of the risk, because Cambodia had a huge, well, still does, but that was raging at the time. India was, I mean, not that there's a lot of connections between here and India, but there are Indian, you know, expert workers coming in. So they knew the threat was there, and that holiday still happened. So we stayed in Ho Chi Minh City, but the week before I had flown to Hue for work, and the airport here was absolutely packed. Lots of people not wearing masks or wearing them poorly. So that was concerning. And then within a couple of weeks, cases completely exploded in a couple provinces next to Hanoi that are big industrial areas, or Samsung factories producing AirPods and Apple products and all of that. But down here in Ho Chi Minh City, it remained surprisingly normal for a while. I mean, they did close gyms early on and karaoke bars and nightclubs, those sorts of things. But there weren't many flight restrictions domestically. And honestly, it was kind of odd how few cases were being detected down here, because Bac Giang province in particular was registering hundreds of cases a day. I mean, within a matter of a few weeks, they had registered like over 5,000 cases, which for Vietnam is a massive number. And then in, was it early June, mid-June, they detected a cluster here in the city related to like a small religious group. and that was largely in one district, which they locked down pretty quickly. And it kind of seemed like if they got that under control, the rest of the city would be okay. But then it cluster started popping up everywhere, and it became quickly apparent that it was basically everywhere in the city already. And they kind of took their time, to be honest, on the strict lockdown. And that when that finally came into effect a week and a half ago, it's called Directive 16. So no public gatherings more than two people, not all non-essential businesses are closed. Most offices are closed. And we had the same directive in March and April of 2020, but so we kind of knew what to expect, but like we were still able to go outside. I remember being able to go out for runs, you know, with a mask, and you could move around the city at least if you wanted to safely. So I think a lot of people were expecting that, but then it became very clear within a day of it going into effect that people were being stopped and fined for running, walking their dogs. People have been fined for going to a different district to go to the supermarket if their home district has it. I mean, every district has supermarkets, but yeah, I mean, police are out. They can stop you at any time if you're on the street and basically ask what you're doing. And if they don't think your reason is good enough to be out, you can get fined, you know, around $100, $150, the equivalent. Yeah, I think myself included, I think a lot of people were kind of taken aback by the severity of the lockdown. Granted, the situation is much more serious than it was last year. I mean, we're recording over 4,000 cases a day just in the city, which, again, if you're in the U.S., I know that sounds like a microscopic number, but it's massive for here when the goal has been zero COVID all along. I mean, there was a day last weekend where just the one-day case total was more than the country had recorded since the start of the outbreak to early May of this year. So just to give you a sense of like how big this outbreak is in perspective to last year. So daily life is very restricted. It hasn't been like this at any other point during the lockdown or during the pandemic here at all.
And is Directive 16 that you mentioned there imposed in Ho Chi Minh City, is that specific to Ho Chi Minh City, or is the same directive in place in other cities around the country?
It's become pretty widespread. Up until a few days ago, it was just here, and then the neighboring provinces of Binh Dinh and Dong Nai, which are very industrial, lots of industrial parks and factories where there have been huge numbers of infections. And I think also the province that Nha Trang is in was under Directive 16. But as of Friday, all of southern Vietnam, so 19 provinces are under it. That's, I think, around 35 million people covered by Directive 16 now. I mean, it could at any point expand to other, like Hanoi, after kind of tamping down its initial outbreak, is now seeing an uptick in cases. They've increased restrictions, not Directive 16 yet, but that could be in the cards. I mean, really any province. I think now that they're kind of understanding, because there was clearly an underestimation of Delta at the start of this, and now it's clear how incredibly transmissible it is. So I think any provinces where that'll even start to see a small uptick in cases will probably see more Directive 16 rules put in place.
So the priority, as it is across Southeast Asia at the moment, is vaccinations. And Vietnam was a little bit slow to begin its vaccine program. What were the reasons for that? And what is the current vaccine situation? And now, where is Vietnam sourcing its vaccine supplies from?
Yeah, this is a huge topic of conversation right now. So, I mean, the question of why it was slow is certainly up for debate. I mean, they are investing in a couple of domestic vaccines, one of which, if all goes well, might be available this November, they're saying. But I've also seen articles where they say it won't be until 2022. Since there was so much success over the last 18 months, we don't know if they were waiting. They thought they could wait on the domestic vaccines and keep the virus at bay, or if, because things had been so good, they just didn't think they would need it this soon. But certainly since this outbreak has gotten serious, there's been kind of a mad rush. AstraZeneca has come in both through COVAX and some government contracts. I think about 30 million Pfizer doses are expected in the next few months. The U.S. is shipping 5 million Moderna doses. There's been some amount of Sinopharm, one of the Chinese vaccines, has come in. I think there's also been a lot of discussion of Sputnik, like I think tens of millions of Sputnik doses from Russia. So it's kind of this mad scramble for almost anything. And currently, only 3.8% of the population has gotten at least one dose, which is a country of 97 million. So it's only a little over 3.5 million people. It's actually, by percentage of population, I think the lowest rate in Southeast Asia, or maybe Myanmar is lower, but every other country in Southeast Asia has a higher vaccination rate at the moment. Yeah, the question is still unanswered as to why it's been so slow. And it still doesn't look like it's going to pick up speed until August or September, which raises a question of how long we're going to be in lockdown in, because if their goal is still zero COVID, given the numbers here, we're not really going to be able to get back to that until mass vaccinations happen.
Yeah, sure. So you mentioned that only, was it three plus percent is currently vaccinated. Are they prioritizing, is that frontline workers, is that elderly residents? How are they actually rolling it out?
Yeah, that's a good question and honestly kind of a tricky one to answer. So initially, they frontline workers, yes, some members of the military, because they some of the like state quarantine facilities are military run. So that makes sense. You know, police officers, I think airport workers, pilots, that sort of thing. So that all made sense. And then since then, it's been a little more difficult to keep track of. I mean, I know a lot has gone to factories and industrial parks, which makes sense. Those are, you know, very high risk. And I mean, a big thing here has been trying to maintain economic growth, which Vietnam did last year. So if you want to keep doing that, you're going to need to keep your factories open. I've actually received one AstraZeneca shot. That was through my partner's furniture company. So that was very last minute. So, I mean, it was a very large factory. But right now, it's not entirely clear who's getting what or why. There is a national registration site for vaccines. Like I've signed up for that. I think lots of people have, but it's kind of like you can sign up and then you'll get a phone call when it's time, but nobody knows when or why that might be.
Yeah, it sounds all a little bit, like you say, very sporadic, very here and there. I mean, so you were talking earlier about how Vietnam has really been pursuing this zero COVID strategy, and you're not quite sure whether vaccines or how that's going to impact that. Has there been any talk of Vietnamese government seeing COVID as endemic? I mean, we've seen that kind of shift in stance. You know, Singapore has started to say, you know, look, we need to look at it as endemic. Thailand has a little bit. Has anything like that come out of Vietnam?
Not that I've seen yet. I mean, I'm sure there has to be discussions like that happening within closed doors, but I haven't really come across that. I mean, granted, I'm not able to read everything, so it's possible I missed something, but I haven't seen any prominent discussion of whether they should move away from that, which just from a quality of life perspective is a little worrying, because again, given just, I mean, if you look at the graphs for cases, it's just going up and up and up, and we don't know when we'll reach the peak. The city officials here keep saying every few days, like the next few days are going to be worse in terms of cases, or at least high in terms of case numbers. And then we're seeing again, an uptick in Hanoi and some other provinces. And I mean, it is important to note that the majority of cases detected every day are still in areas that are like already blocked off or within quarantine. But I'm a little less clear on what exactly that means when, you know, entire cities or provinces are basically locked down. I mean, there should be less community spread happening simply because not many people can go out into the community. But to answer your question, I haven't seen any like major high level discussion of that, potentially moving away from that strategy yet.
So I guess obviously the obvious question about what's the current state of domestic travel across the country, the impact must be pretty substantial, I'd imagine. What's the outlook for the rest of the year? I mean, is there any signs that there may be domestic travel in the second half of this year?
I mean, the signs aren't great, certainly right now. I mean, I think we'll get to this as well, but a lot of tourism companies have had to close over the last year and a half, especially if they're focused on, you know, inbound international tourism. Domestic tourism generally remained pretty healthy in between the waves. Like me and my partner took several trips last year domestically, and, you know, flights were busy, popular destinations were very busy. So a lot of places were able to survive, you know, thanks to that. And yeah, right now, I mean, Southern Vietnam is basically completely shut down. You know, that's the entire Mekong Delta, Ho Chi Minh City and its surrounding provinces, some of the south central coastal provinces, which are also popular beach destinations. Nothing is happening there tourism wise. So there's no southern tourists going to the north or central Vietnam. If we start to see spikes in other provinces, that'll obviously shut that down as well. So yeah, domestic tourism, not good at the moment. And I mean, the forecast for the rest of the year, you know, it just depends on what happens with this outbreak and how well vaccines progress. So that's obviously a very open question.
Absolutely. And so you just said, you know, many tourism businesses have closed. What kind of support is the government giving, any support to tourism businesses?
I can't give like a full answer on that because it's not entirely clear. There have been packages, you know, financial support packages for kind of a broad swath of businesses impacted by the pandemic, but I don't know. I haven't seen figures on how much of that went towards tourism businesses. I mean, given I have seen articles about how many have had to close and how many tour guides are out of work, and freelance tour guides in particular are, I think, almost 100% out of work, especially if they were focused on international tourists. And I'm not sure how much support they've received. I mean, a lot of people need help. I mean, Vietnam's economy has been doing very well, and a lot of people have certainly been pulled up with that, but a lot of people still kind of live on the margins or on day-to-day income, you know, serving, pushing a banh mi cart around or something like that. And all of those people are not working right now, especially in southern Vietnam. So it's a very large pool of people that need help. I mean, the tourism industry is not alone in that. So I don't know what the numbers are, but certainly not enough support for places to like stay in business if they are completely out of work.
Yeah, I was reading yesterday about the airline sector and how some of the Vietnamese airlines were doing okay last year because, as you said, domestic travel was relatively healthy, but they're really struggling now. And obviously, they need that inbound tourism back. There is some talk about doing a kind of Phuket sandbox style opening for one of the islands, but do you think that's likely to happen?
Yeah, the airlines, I mean, even Vietnam Airlines, which is the state flag carrier, is has had to have some emergency loans to stay going. But yeah, so you mentioned the sandbox, that's been proposed for Phu Quoc, which has become increasingly popular and developed in recent years. So the plan as it stands is to vaccinate, I think, at least 70% of the population by September, and then welcome vaccinated international tourists from October only to the island. They wouldn't be able to go anywhere else in the country. So I do know that vaccinations have started on the island. I know some resort staff have already gotten their first shot. I'm not sure which vaccine it is. So that is in progress. Likelihood of it happening, I mean, there's certainly a lot of pressure from the tourism industry. And so a couple of really powerful domestic companies have huge resorts and properties there. So they're certainly going to be pushing for that. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see it get very close to happening. But I've been kind of following the Phuket sandbox, and it seems like that's having quite mixed results, if I'm not wrong. And you can see in the articles about it domestically, like officials specifically cite that as an example of why they need to try something here, because they don't want Thailand to, or any regional competitor, to kind of get ahead of the game. So there's going to be a really big push for it. Whether or not it will succeed, of course, remains to be seen. But I think it'll at least get very close to happening, if not, you know, happen in some sort of way.
That would be good. I mean, it would be good to see some kind of opening. But I guess it might well end up then in the same situation as Thailand, where the rest of the country is still kind of grappling with COVID. And you've just got this little pocket of an island that is accepting international travelers.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, at this point, any vaccination is a good vaccination here in Vietnam, but it does raise the question of, you know, Phu Quoc, I don't think has any cases right now. So, you know, should vaccine doses be going there while the outbreak is raging here in Ho Chi Minh City and in other provinces? You know, it's an open question.
Yeah, totally. I think that's one that all countries in Southeast Asia are kind of grappling with at the moment. So thank you so much, Mike, for coming on and sharing about Vietnam. It's been really interesting to hear your perspective. Where can our listeners find you?
So I use Twitter a lot. So I'm on Twitter at Mike Tatarsky. You can find me there. And then, as we mentioned at the start, my newsletter, Vietnam Weekly. So there's a link to it on my Twitter bio where you can subscribe, or it's just vietnamweekly.substack.com. There's a free-to-read version that's twice a week, and then also a paid version, which you get a couple of extra articles a month. Or if you just want to support my work, it's $5 a month. Yeah, so those would be the two main places, the newsletter and Twitter. And then, of course, check out Saigonier as well. We've got a lot of good work going on there.
And just before we finish, Mike, personally, you're from the US. You've been able to travel around Vietnam last year. At the moment, you cannot. When you are able to travel again, where will be first on your list?
I would say maybe either Da Lat or Quy Nhon, or somewhere along coastal south central Vietnam.
How about internationally? Where will be the first country once borders reopen that you want to fly off to?
Well, it'll be the US. My fiance here is also American, and we got engaged last year. We haven't been able to get married yet, so we would like to do that. Also haven't seen our families in over 2 years at this point. So we got to go to the US, but internationally, we'd really like to go back to Taiwan. So maybe Taiwan.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's Vietnam the Year So Far special edition of the show. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to send us your thoughts and comments on what we discussed with Mike or what we missed out. You can drop us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com. or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. And if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please remember to rate and review us, because that helps other people to find the show.
So that's a wrap for today. And we look forward to talking more travel and tourism in Southeast Asia and beyond with you again very soon.